What's up, everybody? I am Charlie Marlowe. That is the great, and he gets greater every week. Brendan Schaefer, this is low-hanging fruit. Brendan, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. It was good to see you, by the way, on Wednesday on Hot Take Central. That was the first time we were in there at the same time, so that was fun.
That was fun. Fun show, and off on a tangent right out of the gate. If anybody wants
people
to go
love
and...
this. Yeah.
Check out the Charlie Tuna segment on O.J. Simpson. I highly recommend that. But no talk about O.J. right now, unless it's actual orange juice we're drinking. Probably not even that. That was stupid to say.
I've got coffee. That's it.
Okay. I just have water. Let's move right past my bad start and my bad jokes and get to these Redbirds, baby. 9-10 on the season. If we flip back, we basically said after that rough stretch before the A's, I think I said they'd be 6-10. You said,
I think we included the A's series in there. I thought we did.
Well, I said 6-10. You said 7-9. So
maybe.
They were 7-9, correct?
Sounds right. 'Cause they took 2 of 3 from Oakland. Yeah. So that was right.
So Jeff now Fisher. They are 9-10. So you were exactly right, basically. I'm trying to give you some credit.
What else is new? Yeah.
So take the credit and run with it.
I will take the credit. Look, we knew the schedule would be tough at the beginning for the Cardinals. It was maybe not like the Marlins were terrible. I don't know if we saw through what that was going to look like. We knew Oakland would be rough, but the other teams, competitive teams, playoff caliber teams, and it's interesting. The Cardinals are 9-10. That's about where maybe we thought they'd be. It didn't happen in the way that we thought it would happen, though. The offense is not carrying this team. They're scoring 3 runs and exactly 3 runs every single day. No more, no less. And the pitching has actually been pretty solid. And I think the pitching would have been everybody's primary concern coming into the year. And it's held up for the most part. Whereas the offense, they just can't get going right now.
Okay, so it's funny you say that because it's 19 games in. So it's early, but it's not that early. Even though yesterday I said, it's still early, but not that early. And somebody goes, no, it's still very early. There's 143 whatever games left. So I get it. My point is, you know, we should try to draw conclusions based on 19 games. Not too many crazy conclusions, but I'm not going to change my mind. I still am more worried, big picture, about the starting rotation than I am the offense. And I understand that sounds... Because first of all, is this me basically just defending my take? Maybe a little bit of that.
I think so, maybe.
Okay. So here's the deal, though. I still think when you look at the starters, when Gibby goes out there, I called him Gibby. How about that? When Miles Michaelis goes out there, are their ERAs going to be pushing 5? You know, they're pushing 6 right now. But yeah. I think just. End of the season, I don't love it. Sonny Gray's been fantastic, obviously. Steven Matz so far better than I thought, even though his outing in Oakland wasn't great. Lance Lynn has been just fine, kind of what I expected. The offense, I still look at, maybe this is me looking at the back of the baseball card or looking at the names on the back of the jerseys. I don't think this offense can be this bad. Now, before the season started, I said maybe top 10. I think you said chance at top 5.
No, I remember. They needed to be top 5
needed
if they
to
were going
to
be as good as they want to be. But we both had them at like 82, 83 wins, I think. We didn't really think they were going to be as good as they wanted to be. So, yeah, I thought, top 8, they could do that. I still like them on paper, Charlie. But look at the numbers. I mean, these guys are struggling. But you say maybe you're worried that you're not as worried about the hitting. You think some of these dudes will come out of it? Or what's your take?
Well, 100% some of these dudes are going to come out of slow starts. Now, so do I think Paul Goldschmidt is going to be whatever he is, 500-something OPS? I do not. Now, again, maybe he gets to league average a little above, which is not good enough. I think we both agree that's not going to get the Cardinals to the playoffs. I still don't think Paul Goldschmidt is done. Like, he's done as a player. I think he's going to get out of this.
He's done Nolan this before, Arenado, by the way. Goldie's done this before. The year before he won the MVP, April, he had a 590 OPS, struck out 28 times in the month of April. So this is a little worse than that, but it's not like it's unheard of for him to come out of something like this. He's been a slow starter. Just to kind of cut that off at the pass, as I know Goldie is a big topic of conversation.
Right. And I think Arenado is already trending in the right direction. And we'll get to some of the positives. There are a lot of positives on the offensive side. But I'll tell you what, the guy I'm most worried about, and I say this because, look, Victor Scott was not supposed to be in the big leagues. So he's given him good defense. He can't hit worth a lick. Look, he should be in AAA. To me, Jordan Walker is the guy I'm worried about. Now, when I said the other day that he didn't have a good spring, it wasn't that bad when I went and looked back at the numbers. He got on base, not a lot of power. I think he hit 255 in the spring, but a ton of strikeouts then throughout this regular season too. He looks like a guy that you maybe need to send down. And I expected, in me saying the Cardinals are going to have a really nice offense, I expected him to take the next step as a sophomore. He had a really nice, solid offensive rookie year. Defensively, we know it was rough, but he was pretty dang good offensively. And I expected him to take that next climb up the ladder. And it's been the exact opposite. He's taken 2-3 rungs down on the ladder.
Yeah. And looking at this now, Charlie, you mentioned like people say, well, should they send him down? Obviously that's something they did last year. And when they did that, right before they sent him down, the trend was he wasn't in the lineup very much because they couldn't necessarily justify the defense with all the outfielders they were. I believe they were in San Francisco, more spacious outfield, and it just seemed like he wasn't playing. And then the next day he was sent down. And you look up now, and of the last four games, he's only started one of them, and he's come off the bench in the other three. I'm not saying that means they're about to send him down, but it is kind of interesting that, you know, they've kind of curtailed his playing time a little bit. With Newt Barr back, there's a squeeze. Ollie Marmol's got to make out his daily lineup, and this is a team that's not putting up run production. And if Walker's not contributing to scoring, he's obviously not contributing defensively comparatively to some other players that you could put in right field. I know Newt got some time out there. They trust Donnie and left. And then the center field situation, they've been kind of oscillating between Ciani and Victor Scott. So, like, those are two of your three outfield spots. You know that Newt Barr's going to be in one of the three on a daily basis. But it feels like Ollie Marmol right now is kind of in between on what he really needs to be doing with those spots. And I can't blame him because you need to try to find some production from somewhere. And guys that you thought were going to be a part of that plan, like Jordan Walker, right now are not producing. And it's kind of starting to cause a dip in playing time, which I do wonder openly if that means maybe they would consider making a move at some point, Charlie.
So Jordan Walker, just so we have the stats here, he is hitting .180. His OBP is .246. He's slugging .300 for a .546 OPS, which is crazy. That's still 30 points better than Goldie. That's how bad Goldie has been. Maybe they should send Goldie down. No, I'm just kidding.
People want to move Goldie down in the order, and I don't know when's too early, when's too late to do that. Because, like, okay, you're going to move Goldie down. If you move him down to three, that's still prominent in the lineup. You move him down to cleanup, that's still cleanup. To me, if you're moving Goldie down because you're like, we just can't have this guy taking the at-bats he's taking from the two hole, are you moving him to five? Like, what are you even doing? That's why I think lineup construction, a little bit overrated, fun to talk about, but probably not the end all be all. But I know you're talking Jordan Walker, but do you move Goldie down in the order, or do you just say he's Goldie, he's going to come out of it like he normally does after a slow start?
So I think this is a really interesting conversation potentially, because to me with baseball, so much of this is ego for whatever reason. And when I say ego, because I don't think Paul Goldschmidt has a big ego in terms of being arrogant.
Right.
What I'm saying is managers feel like, oh, I can't move the Hall of Fame guy, the $26 million guy. I can't drop him down. And this is where I've always found this funny, because if you look at the other big sport in town, sorry, STL City, but I've always thought it was funny with hockey that they'll shift lines around all the time, right? To try to get people going. They'll shift a guy up, they'll shift a guy down, they try to pair somebody up, they flip it around. And I feel like it isn't like, oh my God, what did you do to this player or Vladimir Tarasenko? It happens all the time in hockey.
The coach gets credit for doing it. Yes. Everyone's like, oh, brilliant.
Yes, line combinations, we talk about it kind of in the same way you talk about baseball lines. But for whatever reason with baseball, if it's a player with a pedigree, if it's a player that's a veteran, if it's a player who has the contract, nobody wants to do that. And to me, if you move Goldie down for a little bit to try to get him going, I think that's fine. I feel like Ollie probably won't do that, though.
I don't think he will. And like you said, Goldie doesn't have an ego. And it's not even that the guys who don't want to move have an ego. That's not necessarily what I'm saying. But for instance, a guy like Nolan Arenado, I think, is almost different because he's been pretty open. I like being cleanup. He prefers cleanup to being batting in the three hole. And I think a guy who grew up with Albert Pujols batting in the three hole for Tony La Russa, like it used to be the cleanup spot, that was the spot for your guy. And then Tony moved Albert to the three hole. And then that was sort of the trend around baseball. And now we've seen even the number two spot in the lineup for a lot of managers is your dude. That's your best hitter. But Nolan Arenado, it's a preference thing. He prefers, he feels the most comfortable batting cleanup for whatever those reasons might be. So I think for certain guys, you do want to maybe kind of cater to that a little bit if it's a comfort factor, whether fans think that's something you should do or not. Like, I do think to certain guys it matters. I agree with you. I don't think for Goldschmidt he would care either way. He's like, am I playing? Am I in the lineup? Great. I'll bat when it's my turn. Like, I can count to nine. I know which is my spot. Like, I don't think he would care, but I also agree with you. I don't think that Ollie Marmol, because what is that? What's the message there? Well, is that, well, now Ollie's panicking. Like, those same fans who are asking him to move him down, I think would then say, well, that's an admission now that Goldie's not the same. Our lineup is not capable of being what they thought it could. I think you just open yourself up to scrutiny for that. But I do understand, like, tangibly on the field, if you're scoring only three runs every day, trying to get more at bats for the players who are seeing the ball better might be the better way. So it is. I could see both sides of this one.
It's funny, too, because if you really wanted to do it based on who's hot right now, you'd probably bat Goldie like seventh. You know what I'm saying? And yeah. What would you have right now? If Brendan Schaefer was Ollie Marmol, what would be your lineup? And I know we don't have to do matchups like righty versus lefty.
Yeah, but yeah. Tonight
versus Milwaukee. Where would you put guys right now to try to get folks going?
Interesting. I mean, if you were going to do, like, for me, I personally would not move Goldschmidt. I know that's probably the wrong answer. A lot of people aren't looking to hear that answer. I would say give it, whether it's another week or so. I said, I don't think Ollie makes that move in April, but if you get to May 1st and he's still OPSing 510, you're like, okay, maybe do something different. But if I were going to be bold with it, Let's give the people the answer that they want. Acknowledging that I don't think Goldie is going to move, and I kind of understand why. You could go like Donovan. I know that the right left is like Ollie's favorite thing, and at sometimes I'm like, yeah, if everybody's kind of cooking, I'm good with it. I want Newt Barbat in second. I liked it. They did this for a period where they went Donovan Newt Bar, and I get it. They're two lefties. They're also two guys who are not very splitty. They're not like susceptible to left-handed pitching. They can figure it out. So I don't think I would mind that at all. Arenado likes to bat cleanup, so I'm going to let him. I'm going to keep him four, and I think Wilson's your three right now with the way that he's swinging it. So we'll go Wilson. Gorman has struggled as well. He struggled as well, but I'll mix it up with a lefty in there between the righties, and then I'll go Goldie. How about that? Goldie's down at six. That's kind of unusual. I'm finding a way to get Herrera in the lineup. I don't care which of them are catching between Contreras and Herrera, but he's swinging it too well right now not to be in there in some form or fashion. And you're noticing, I forget the positions that I still need. Jordan Walker's not going to be in this lineup because of the way he's swinging it. And so I think that is the answer to the question of, should they send him down? Because I think that sometimes sends the wrong message to a guy that you want to build around. But I don't know, if they're not having the faith to put him in the lineup daily right now, why necessarily would I consider, you know, keeping him in there? Honestly, Mason Wynn is another guy. You could make an argument, Charlie, that you could go Donovan, Mason Wynn up at number two, and then Newt Barr, and you still get your right, left, right. But since I already kind of overcommitted to this, I'll keep Wynn in the eighth spot for right now. Just let him kind of help turn the lineup over. And if Victor Scott's on my team, he's in my nine hole, and he's my center fielder every day. All due respect to Ciani. If they wanted to send Victor Scott down, you can make that move, and then it would be a different conversation about who plays center. But if Scott's on the roster, he's still my guy because I think the defense is that good.
So I like your lineup there. I think it's interesting because your line of thinking on Mason Wynn is kind of mine, which is clearly everybody loves what he's doing right now. Mason Wynn is slashing .347 average, .404 on base, .469 slug for .873 OPS. However, young guy, first big league season, even though everybody else is struggling, I don't want to move him up to a premium spot yet, right? I just let him cook, let him simmer, let him marinate. Now, again, if if we're 55 games into the season, whatever, if we're a third of the way into the season, the Cardinals are still middling around 500, and Goldie and a couple other guys, Jordan Walker, whoever else, Nolan Gorman, if these guys aren't getting close to what they should be, okay, then I think you can move Mason Wynn. But right now, I just like keeping the pressure off Mason Wynn. But maybe he's a guy who's fine with it. But right now, I think you leave him where he is. Otherwise, if you're looking at who's producing,
yeah.
I mean, Mason Wynn's got to be close to the top. I think it's here's maybe a good conversation, which we can – I don't want to act like, hey, we're 19 games in. And I want to already look towards 2025. But I think it's interesting. Wilson Contreras and Ivan Herrera, they're hitting so well. And if they continue, man, it really kind of rolls into the does Goldie come back situation. If you're going to have those guys catch about half and play some first and play some DH, don't you think that's kind of an interesting foreshadowing?
Oh, it's very interesting. And you could maneuver it again. We're not writing Goldie off. If I had to get right now, just so everybody doesn't get the wrong idea, predict for me Goldie's, let's say he stays with the Cardinals all year, no trade. He plays, you know, 140 games. What's his OPS to end the season? Just give me your best earnest prediction on what it'll be. And then I'll answer okay. that question about 25. Cause I don't want to say, yeah, let's get that 25 lineup as if we're writing off Goldie. Cause I'm not there yet.
Well, hold on. I'm not, by the way, in saying this, I'm not writing off Goldie at all.
I agree.
What I'm saying more is if he does have a steep decline, then you're thinking, well, do we want to re-sign him?
100%.
Right? So that's the conversation I was looking for. I'll go ahead and say, I'd like to look this up. What's Goldie's career OPS? Not
900. He's 904 for his career as of like last week when I looked it up.
I'm going to say that Goldie.
He was 810 Goldie, last year, by the way. 810.
810.
In 2023, okay. Which we thought was a down year at the time.
Correct. I think Goldie's OPS is going to be 775.
I'm going to go 801.
Okay.
I'm going down with the ship, which 801 wouldn't be amazing, right? But I've seen it from Paul Goldschmidt before where a week happens and his OPS will go from 517 to 717 in a blink of an eye. So I'm going to say that that's still there within him. Now I will allow us to have the conversation you wanted to have because I do think it is a good one. I assume like Contreras has played. I haven't looked at the game logs, but I assume he's played a little first before or Herrera. One of the two could do it. I just assume because it always feels like the catcher that's not catching, he can just go stand at first. So we're just going to pretend that that won't be too big of a deal. You got the point. Are you ready? You got something?
Because I did look this up the other day. He's played some outfield and some first. I think it was maybe 30 games in the outfield, a little bit of first. So yes, Willie has played a little bit. I'll look it up right now, but it's something like that.
But I just assume that that probably works because we just kind of always feel like, just put him at first. It's fine. And I think in this case, it probably would be fine. The other thing though, Herrera's got to start throwing out some base runners. I like what he's done catching wise, but that teams are going to start to figure that out. You know, Willie's got a good arm back there. Herrera, I think the Cardinals aren't overly concerned about it yet. The last time I was in the room when Ollie was asked about it was probably a week and a half ago, whenever it was on the homestand. And he said, you know, when he came up in 22, they just didn't think he was ready. And he really evolved a lot since then. If Herrera had been ready in Yadi's final season, and then they could have seen the signs coming that he would be this guy offensively and just the way he handles himself, Wilson wouldn't be on this team. They wouldn't have had to sign a catcher. But they said, I don't think Herrera is going to be the answer yet. Herrera almost used that as fuel, and then he turned himself into a really nice player. So they've got both guys. What do you do? I agree. You could have them both in the lineup in 2025, playing some first. Alec Burleson's maybe around getting some time at first. We know Donnie can fit in there if maybe a Sajacy comes up. And so there's more middle infielders where Donovan shifts to a first base on occasion. That could work. Like if this season does go off the rails to the extent that we're talking about that little bit of a mini retool, we could see Goldie walking, Arenado traded, and them still fielding a lineup that they'll probably still sell $3 million next year. And it'll be on a $110 million payroll. But there's a way to do that with some of the young players they have. But you also need the Gormans to be good and the Walkers to be good in that scenario. But to kind of make this story shorter than I just made it, yeah, I think you could do that in 2025 with your two catchers that they both might have an OPS above 800. Like Herrera looks like an everyday number five, number six type of hitter, the way he's hitting. I know it's early, but I think I trust it. I think I trust him to be able to maintain that.
So we have the numbers. Willie has played 11 games at first base in his career.
Yeah, that's good enough. No, I mean, really, if they've done it before, they'll do it again.
Yeah. He's played 39 games in the outfield in his career, 35 in left field. So, but I think it's not just Goldie struggling. It's also Goldie's age, and it's also the fact that we mentioned Contreras, Herrera, and we haven't even mentioned Jordan Walker, who may be long-term profiles as a first baseman. I don't know, but I think you can't rule that out. I also so Goldie's 36, he'll be 37 in September. I also just think, you know, we can spin this into the larger conversation of the trend, the negative trend of the last 5 to 8 years, whatever it is, of the Cardinals not being good at knowing when to hold them and knowing when to fold them, not knowing when to keep guys, and then kind of the legacy contracts that we've seen. The Matt Carpenter one is the one that we all really point to. Even at the end, you know, Waino was going to get 5,000 opportunities. You bring back Yadi and Albert. Obviously, Albert worked out. Sometimes it does work out. But to me, there's a lot of warning signs right now. Age, production, other players that can play that position, and kind of a roster clog. Again, if you're going to want to play Herrera and Contreras almost every game, both those guys, I'm starting to think it doesn't make sense roster construction-wise to bring a Goldie back. And it's early, but you can look to 2025 and kind of make that argument pretty easily.
So let me ask you this way then. If he gets the 775 OPS that you're predicting, which again, I put you on the spot and asked, but if that's kind of the season, which would indicate a little more decline, maybe he's just not quite the superstar that he was, but probably still good leader, still good defense, all those things. Is there a number where you say, if Goldie's willing to take less, I think he's still worth having around if he's a 770 and 800 OPS guy instead of MVP candidate? You know, is there a number where you go, yeah, he's taking less money, kind of like Waino was doing there for a few years when he was on the incentive contracts because he wanted to stick around, but he also knew that you look at his numbers and he couldn't demand more from you at the time. Is there a number for you? If he kind of has the season where he bounces back, but not to prior levels.
Just so everybody knows, I love Goldie, by the way. But he will be 37. So
Marlo's going to bury Goldie. Get ready for this.
No, let's be real. An extension is going to be at least 2 years. At least. Okay?
Yeah.
So that means age 37, 38 season. Let's say he does have the exact OPS that I said, 775. So you're looking at a decline from... Now, obviously, the MVP year was amazing. That was 981. But then you're going to 810. Let's say it's 775. Don't you think you can price, okay, the next couple of years, maybe it's 750. He's 37. He's 38. Again, I love Paul Goldschmidt, but the Cardinals have been bad at making tough decisions, right? Go back to, I'll keep making different sports references, but Bill Belichick, for years, what was he great at? He was great at trading the dude when he still had value. It's the old saying, it's always better to trade a guy 1 year early than 1 year late. And I feel like we can talk about all the trades. We can talk about the Matt Carpenter extension, whatever it is. I think the Cardinals have gotten bad at that. And I do think, you know this, the Cardinals love their guys. Goldie, even though he wasn't drafted as a Cardinal, he's now viewed as a legacy type Cardinal. The Cardinals always give those guys more years than they should. Big picture. Some of them work out. Don't get me wrong. But the Cardinals always give those guys that they love too many extra years and deals. Is that fair?
I think it is fair. But I also would point to this example being one where maybe they're learning from that. Because it was almost treated like a foregone conclusion that Goldie would get the extension before the year. Like, oh yeah, he's coming up on the final year. They'll do that in spring. But like the Matt Carpenter deal maybe taught him, you don't have to do that. You're bidding against yourself, essentially, because if Goldie has a 770 OPS, his market and free agency is not going to be the same. And could it be a little bit uncomfortable, like on a personal level, to say, hey, Goldie, we like you, but we might have to put our business hat on for this one and make a decision on if you're back, it's going to be for, you know, market value instead of just giving it to you up front before knowing how your final year plays out. I think they've already, like, not to like pat him on the back too much or anything, but by not doing the thing that we all assumed they would do in February with Goldie and letting this year play out instead. I think they've maybe even learned their lesson a little bit on that. But the other reason that that might have been the case is I think they could be plotting, not plotting like this is their plan A, but their plan B if this year doesn't go well, is that sort of reduction in payroll, take a year, take a step back before kind of reloading the following year. And maybe all the TV stuff is figured out by then. It just feels like the Goldie thing came at a time where it's part of a larger opportunity to, if the Cardinals have two losing seasons in a row, they don't need to continue fighting this upstream battle by signing, you know, 36-year-old free agent starters and continuing to try and plug those holes. They can do none of that, test out some internal options, and just accept in their minds, like, if 2025 is another 75-win season, maybe we do that while saving some money and learning more about our internal options that typically we are blocking by adding 36-year-old free agent starters that don't really have a lot of upside anyway. You know what I mean? Like, I think the Goldie thing, I want to credit them for recognizing, hey, you didn't have to sign him, and they didn't. But also, I think it might be part of a, not a sinister plan, but like a more under the table of like, if this doesn't go well, we do have all of these guys coming off the books at once, and maybe we can just kind of backfill internally and expect that that might not lead to a playoff run in 2025. But we could also then learn about who sticks around after we start to fill holes for the following year. I still think that's a back channel plan that could go into effect if this season doesn't go well.
And how about instead of a sinister plan, how about just smart baseball and basically not being emotional, which is funny because when you think about John Mozeliak, the way he runs the team, it's like a hedge fund. So it's kind of funny because the way they look at numbers and whatnot, it feels very unemotional. Yet yeah. The Cardinals brand is all about emotion, which we love with opening day and the red jackets and kind of their guys. I do think here's what I said last year trade deadline, this past winter, and I still agree with it now. And I didn't think Goldie was going to be this bad, and I didn't think Arenado was okay. I think he'll be fine. He's come around already.
Yeah, I mean, he's come around the last week and a half
for sure. So, but my point is more so, what the hell does it matter if you have Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado, and they're probably both going to be Hall of Famers and they're superstars? What does it matter if they're on the team if you can't win with the roster the way it's constructed? And that's what I said all last year was, dude, so everybody knows, I love Goldie. I love Arenado. But what this team needs is another Sonny Gray. And I still don't think, even if those guys hit, I still don't think they're going to make a deep playoff run. So to me, it's great to have Goldie. We love it. It's great to have Arenado. We love it. Do you still think this team can run deep the way it is with the starting pitching? That's my whole thing is what the Cardinals failed to do was acquire starting pitching. And I said they had to do whatever it took to get the type of starting pitching to make a deep playoff run. And if that's trading a big dog, that's trading a big dog. And that could have been anybody. That whether you can throw Gorman in there or whoever, the Goldie talk, they didn't do that. And so I just feel like there's a very good chance they're going to waste another year or so of Goldenado with a pitching staff that isn't good enough.
Yeah, and there, again, we don't know what the market was. It's easy to say, and I did say, look, if you're going to make that kind of trade for elite pitching, and those guys at the time weren't being dealt, but then we did see Dylan Cease get moved, and we did see, you know, Glasnow got moved. Granted, what was coming back in those deals was prime on-the-come pitching prospects, and the Cardinals don't have any, at least on the level that I think those teams and the guys that were moved were considered. But this kind of ties into your point about knowing when to hold them, when to fold them, and when to maybe trade somebody away at the height of their value. Our perception is that Nolan Gorman had a lot of value last year because we're like, well, he's a raw power hitter. He's still so young, team controllable. I don't know. Maybe the rest of the league said, nah, he's going to be this streaky, hot, cold guy, and we just don't really think he's going to develop into that dude. And right now, it looks like the Cardinals are at risk of seeing that happen. Now, maybe Gorman goes on a tear here, and in a week, that sounds like a silly statement. But hasn't that sort of been the story with him the last couple of years? So, like, it's kind of hard to measure out our perception of what the league thinks his value is. And, like, should they have pulled the trigger if that was an option and gotten a pitcher for him and maybe you had to add on to Gorman to get that arm? Or was that never really an option? And so it's hard to blame the Cardinals for not exercising the most from his value at the time, because maybe we were wrong about what his value was across the rest of the league. But you're right in terms of, like, I think they do need to have that difference-making pitching staff. It's hard to have that when you have to acquire all of them, and they can't develop the pitcher, and they can't even have the prospect of the caliber that the league is trying to trade for that guy and give you their Dylan Cease or their Tyler Glasnow. Like, maybe Tink Hentz, he's looked pretty good to begin this season. Maybe he ends up being that answer, but that's not the answer today. It might not even quite be the answer tomorrow. So when you're always scrounging free agency to try to come up with these options, and you're the Cardinals and you have that parachute in the back of your mind of, we don't want to overcommit on a longer term deal for some of these high caliber starters, because we might want to take a step back in 2025. Like, the roster and the payroll and the way it's structured is set up to be able to effectively take a small step back. They'll still be competitive, but they're not going to go all in and try. And you talk about balancing emotions versus running it like a hedge fund. I think, and this is maybe a credit to him, I'm not going to say this as a diss, I think Bill DeWitt wants to have the emotions because he understands that the fan base historically has cared about those things and having their guys, their legacy guys stay. But that was during a period where they never lost. So it's easy when you're always winning and in the mix to say, well, as a fan, I also value having my favorite guys still on the team. But now you're having to sort of measure one against the other because they're not winning. Just people aren't used to that. In the Bill DeWitt era, people aren't used to seeing that play out. So I think that's kind of it's a multi-tiered conversation, but you're right. Like, they're going to need pitching. What I would say though, Sonny Gray, Lance Lynn, and maybe four innings of Steven Matz with a bullpen that's pretty good, I think, at this point, that could still get you through an NLDS. I don't know about an NLCS though. I think they've got enough to conceivably get lucky and make it happen. But in a 7-game series, you're right. I don't think they quite have the pitching unless they outslug everybody, which we've seen teams do in recent postseasons, but the Cardinals are 23rd in OPS right now. So they're not really that team at this point in time.
All right. And this is my fault, by the way. This is a great conversation, by the way, but we're focusing already so much big picture, which we always do. And it is, look,
people like that games. Because the same thing's happened every game this time. They're scoring three runs. Right. Like, people don't mind big picture, I don't think.
Yeah. No, you're right. I do, though. I want to talk about the pitching side of what we've seen so far. And we've already discussed some of this, but yeah, Sonny Gray as advertised. Maybe it's just me and I'm just looking at the names. I see the Cardinals, what, they're like 20th in starter ERA, but that's actually kind of misleading because it's so jumbled. I think the starters have been pretty dang good. I still don't think they're going to be great, don't get me wrong, but they're giving you a shot. The bullpen has been fantastic. I think we both thought that was probably going to be the case. Top 10 type bullpen. What do you think about the hurdlers so far?
Well, yeah, and you mentioned starter ERA. They're at 4.21, which is 19th in baseball, and honestly, not too dissimilar from what I think we would have guessed at the beginning. We said they can be top half, top 15 or so, but when you have a guy with an ERA of 6 like Gibby does and Miles is up at like 5.8, to have a 4.1 ERA for your starters I think is pretty respectable. And the bullpen's been good. I think they're like touching top 10 in ERA, give or take, and they still might not be at their best. We haven't seen Keenan Middleton yet. Now, maybe we never do because he's hurt, but it'd be nice to get him back, and I think you're even a little bit stronger. Polante has been maybe wedged into some spots that you'd like to bump him down a slot in terms of like the way you tier the bullpen, but otherwise you feel pretty good. Like, Gray, I think, is going to continue to be really good. Lance Lynn is their second best pitcher. He just is, because he has the K stuff. I know he only struck out one in his last game, but he also, I think, has the ability as a veteran to toggle it and to know on a given night when maybe the K isn't the thing he needs to be relying upon to get his team through 7 innings and to be more efficient like he did in his last start. So between those two, I think you feel good about where you're at. The totality of this rotation might be decided upon the rest of the guys. And I think Gibson's going to be kind of what he's been. He'll have some good starts. He'll have some bad ones. And hopefully in the bad ones, he at least eats up innings. Steven Matz in the 5th inning is kind of a thing for me at this point. Like, is it a case where he's just not going to be able to? You can look back at his game logs too. He's never really been that guy for the Cardinals that gets through 6 or 7. Do they have to almost treat him like a have a piggyback or some sort of answer for what happens to him when he gets into the 5th inning? His ERA is nice, but he's not really accomplishing the goal of getting you deep into starts, which has kind of been the mantra of this team. And Miles Michaelis, I think, just needs to I don't know. He just needs to throw more quality starts than the ones where he gets shelled. It's been about 50-50 to this point, and I think he's kind of who he is, but who he is can be really good if they continue to prioritize defense behind him, which they've done for the most part so far. But if we have that conversation about sending down Victor Scott and moving Newt Barr to center, that's going to probably decrease the quality of your defense at the, because you're trying to get more offense in it. So you have to kind of make those decisions, which I don't think would be helpful to a Miles Mikolas. But I'm not really worried about the pitching. It's been about what I thought it would be, and I think what it can be is workable, but not with this level of offensive production. They've got to hit more. So that's where I'm at. I know you say you're still worried about the rotation. I'm actually completely fine with what they've done, and I expect it to continue. I don't think the bottom falls out of this rotation like it did last year.
Okay, I agree with that. I think sometimes, too, we always like to argue about semantics here and there. Some of this, too, is even my criticisms. I just still look at this team, and I feel like they are who we thought they were. I mean, they're 9-10. It was a rough early slate. So you could even say, okay, for me, they're probably a game better maybe than I thought, or right around there. I don't see this as an elite team. I think they're going to be around 500 most of the year. Now, if they are, maybe that means, hey, they're still damn close to the deadline. They can add a piece and they can ascend. I don't know. When I say I'm worried about the starting rotation, I don't mean I'm worried that it's going to be last year. I'm worried that it's going to be a starting rotation that finishes the year 83-79. You know what I'm saying? And when I look at the names, like I always try to think back a couple years back to that 17 game winning streak. And by the way, they didn't have a bunch of aces that year either. Yeah. Right. But when I look at, to me, there's so much volatility with Mikolas, Gibson, and then even I think Mats is going to run into issues, like you said, because you're going to have to ask for 12 outs or more sometimes from your bullpen. I just find it hard to believe that this team is going to go on a bunch of runs. Do you know what I'm saying? I think there's going to be a lot of win a couple, lose a couple. Like I don't see this rotation going on a month where all of a sudden the team goes 20-6. I don't see that, because I think there's going to be a lot of starts where these guys give it up.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the way they were designed to be, a team that mostly, you know, you look in the past week, they've given up 6-2, 1-5, 4-6, 4-0, 5. Like, they're going to give up 4 and 5 a lot. The offense was supposed to counteract that. That's the way they're built. They admitted it. They said, look, we got to have innings eaters. We got to have guys that'll go deep. It's going to keep our bullpen a little fresher for when we can use them. But you're not trotting out Kittredge, JoJo, and Helsley unless you're in the game 4-3 or in the game 5-4. They got to score 4 runs. That's how you go 20-6 in a month. The way this team is built is by scoring a bunch of runs and having a lineup that 1-9, there aren't any easy outs. There's no breaks. And at times, this group, the same group of names, looks like that sometimes. It's not really been that way in 2024 at all. You'll have a game or two where you go, that's what it is. That's what it's supposed to be. But then it goes away for 3 more days. So they almost self-admittedly have to be that team, knowing that, yes, we signed 2 guys at the back of our rotation and had one in Mikolas already in there and another kind of in Mats where you don't really know, that are going to be giving up 3-4 runs a game, but they might go 6-7 innings, and that's going to help our bullpen to be fresher. But when you sign a group of players that you expect to give up 3 or 4 in their starts, you have to score at least that many runs to win. Is that a great plan? Is that a plan that works in modern baseball? I don't know, but it's the one they chose. So that's the way that they're going to have to sink or swim this year. And if the offense isn't that kind of offense, then they will not, it won't work. It just won't.
So is it fair to say then that this team, and this was a criticism from a lot of folks. I think we all said things like this. Is it fair to say, as we're sitting here like 12-13% of the way through the season, that maybe this team's margin for error was even slimmer than we thought it was? Because look, knowing who your starters were, okay, they're going to eat some innings, but they may give up 3 runs each time. They may all be 4.5 ERA guys. Okay, but you know what? We like our offense, and I can't lie. I like the offense. But once you kind of start to watch some games being played, you do realize that that does set up a razor thin margin for error. And if a couple things go wrong, which they already have, all of a sudden, it's not looking too great.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And that's why there was criticism of the plan they put together. I was willing to watch the plan play out, and I trusted it from a pitching perspective. And the pitching perspective is what has basically delivered on what they were wanting to see. But it only worked if paired with an offense that was pretty good. Even right now, a Cardinal offense, what are they, like 23rd or so in OPS? Even if they were 14th in OPS right now, they're probably 11-8, 10-9. They probably pick off a couple of extra games here and there just on having a league average offense instead of one that's toward the bottom. They need to have a top 10 offense. And I've said multiple times, maybe even better to truly be the contender that they'd like to be. But that's maybe not a realistic ask. I never thought that they would necessarily be a top five offense. I said, if you're knocking on the door of that, perhaps it's enough. But they're knocking on the door of bottom five. It's just not going to match up. And that's a shame, because what you're getting from the pitching is exactly the plan that I think they intended to put together. You've seen a bullpen that has been really good with your ace guys like Kittredge, JoJo, and Helsley have been really good. Gio gives up a few too many homers, but even he's had some bright moments. That's half your bullpen that you should be feeling really good about, but it's not going to matter if you're going into every seventh inning down 4-1 or 3-1. It's just not going to work. So the pitching plan hasn't been the problem. They didn't add to the offense in the offseason, by the way. They said, look, we kind of think we got the guys that we need to have. They added a couple of bench players, and they thought, let's let these guys that we already have internal, the old guys bounce back, the young guys take a step forward, bada bing, bada boom, we've got a great lineup. It just hasn't materialized, and that's a tough thing, because I don't know how you fix that at the deadline. It's easy to add a starter. If somebody goes down, if Matt's doesn't hold up, you go, hey, we've got one starter spot. Let's add Charlie's legit 1B to Sonny Gray's 1A, and then we're off and running. That's all well and good. How do you fix this offense without a creative trade where you move away a guy thinking, uh-oh, we might have just traded the guy that's going to be the next DeRozarena, Adolis Garcia, Tyler O'Neill. Like, we didn't get enough out of this guy, but he's still got enough value that we can kind of shake it up. I don't really think that's Mozeliak's type of trade. There's not an obvious blueprint of what that would look like. So I think the offense is kind of the one that you've got, unless they have so many injuries that it's just a plug and play on a trade that they make. And that's kind of, it's a good thing because you like the names on paper. It's a scary thing because the names on paper are not performing in reality right now.
Yeah. And I try to be fair when I'm criticizing the Cardinals in terms of the position players. They had some guys to get rid of. Now, the whole thing with Tyler O'Neill, that gets back to that relationship was damaged last year. And I'm not even trying to get into that. But I can't criticize the Cardinals as much for the position players because I think they have a lot of really good guys, a lot of really good names, and it didn't really make any sense to add or move. You kind of had a lot of talent, and it's like, let's see what you guys got.
Yeah.
The pitching staff, though, was where it was, look, you added three starters. You added three. There were three spots. Correct. But you could have added more at the top end. That's where I think it's fair to criticize the Cardinals. And then also, I've been critical of Ollie, but in a way of me saying, I just didn't think he deserved the extension. I understand why he got it. I didn't think he had earned it. But I think it's also fair to say, as you watched last year, and I don't think Ollie is a great manager by any means. I think he has his faults, but he's young. I think he could be really good. I think we're also seeing, I almost want to go back to another Blues comparison. This is not a good roster. It wasn't last year. And so far, it looks like it's probably middle of the pack-ish. And I think we should all remember that when we criticize Ollie. And I do also, but it's always more on the person who put the roster together. And
you
that's
call
John
him a moron? You call Mo a moron. Wow.
What did I say?
You said it's typically more on the guy that put together the roster.
See? Oh, no. I didn't even, I guess, I would never call John Mozeliak a moron.
I don't know.
I respect him. I will criticize him, but I would never call him a moron.
Run the tape. I think it'll show the truth. My thoughts on the Ollie extension for a minute was that I think the Cardinals in the front office almost wanted to make it known that whatever was about to happen wasn't necessarily on the field manager. Because again, I think behind the scenes a little bit, they've put together a roster, ownership on down to the front office, knowing that they put a good foot forward, but they didn't put their best foot forward as though their lives were at stake to win in 2024. right? Like there was a level of urgency to get another starter, to do some things that were a little more bold that I think could have happened if that was the end all be all of what had to occur. But I think they said, we put together a team that can certainly contend. Maybe we get a little lucky and the Central doesn't take that step forward with the other four teams, which right now it looks like they're all playing pretty good baseball. So maybe they lose that bet. But I think that was sort of their bet. And they wanted it to be such that like Ollie didn't take the fall for that taking place. And maybe he does anyway. Maybe Mozeliak kind of steps aside at the end of the year. Let's talk about 90 losses again. Maybe Mo goes, yeah, I'm now a special advisor to whoever steps into my seat. And that guy may pick a new manager. He may not. And if he does, then at least Ollie gets a nice, you know, nice severance because he had the contract. Like, I don't know what their plan's going to be. I think Ollie does a pretty good job by and large, but I think you're right with it to say like the roster is the one that he's got to be able to manage. I do think they've put him in a little bit better of a position to manage that roster because when people would complain last year about him taking out starters in the fifth, they have to realize he didn't have the starters that were built to pitch beyond the fifth. And now I think you have a group of four that are, and then one that we have questions about, which is Steven Matz, as to whether he's going to be capable of doing that. But I think, you know, he's got to manage the roster that he has, and no manager is going to look very good when half of your lineup is hitting 180. Like, it's impossible. Put him in any order you want. It's not really going to make much of a difference. They've got to hit. I know I keep sounding like a broken clock. I'm redundant with all of this, but they've got to hit. That's the only thing that's going to change for the Cardinals in order to get them going.
Yeah, and you mentioned about we're again kind of looking towards the future, but whatever happens with Mozeliak, and look, we could both look really stupid right now if a month from now, all of a sudden, the Cardinals do surge, and here we are already talking about the future and basically say, oh, this season,
it's a worthy road to walk down when we podcast it as is. Often as we do.
Correct. And I also, and I agree with it. I just feel like everything with the Cardinals, and it's not just the bad year last year, it's kind of the trend. It feels stale. It even feels stale now at 9-10. And I just wonder, we always joke about the Chaim Bloom situation. And we know that there's a succession plan that's going to be in place. I just look at the Cardinals. They were so great for so many years under DeWitt. And, you know, you had La Russa, but you had Mozeliak, you had Luno. I'm not this guy that gives all the credit to Luno. He gets a lot. But I give a lot of credit to John Mozeliak as well for the first, whatever it is, 8, 9, 10, 11 years of his run. But I feel like they have lost their way a little bit. Just top down, decision making, just baseball, drafting, developing decisions. And that's where the more I do think about it, Chaim Bloom just being an outsider, and Bill DeWitt's very smart. I would, whether it's this winter, next winter, whatever, we think John Mozeliak has two more years left, including this one. I would go outside of the organization personally, because I feel like, and I understand Chaim Bloom is now inside the organization, but so what do you think about that line of thinking? Regardless from what you've seen, the trend last year, this year, I just feel like the Cardinals do need a bit of an organizational rebrand, and somebody from the outside, even if it's Chaim Bloom, who's been here for a year but brings an outside perspective. As a business owner, if I'm Bill DeWitt, I feel like this organization, his business, needs that.
I 100% agree, and I think he's recognized that by bringing Chaim Bloom in. And specific to Chaim Bloom and why I think he would make sense as a successor, especially if they don't right the ship here, but even if they do, I think Bill DeWitt, who's a good businessman, has seen sort of what Chaim Bloom has always been about. When he was with Tampa, he was helping to run those teams, develop players, and win on low payrolls. Boston hired him for the head job, and their ownership said, slash payroll. Like, we're not paying Mookie Betts, figure it out. And he did what he was asked. They didn't win as much as they wanted because they're in a really tough division. And then they fired him because they said he didn't do a good enough job. And now you're seeing the development of maybe some of the guys that were put together when he was in Boston, their young pitching staff, like they're all kind of proud of what they have now on the pitching side. And that's especially where I think the Cardinals could use some help with development, because we've talked about always having to sign free agent pitchers or people begging to trade for one. When's the last time they've developed one and had those guys on minimal salaries and pitching capably? Like, that combination, I get Zach Thompson's not being paid a lot, but he's also more of a number five if he gets into the rotation rather than a number two or three. So all of those things to me add up and say, well, Bill DeWitt has seen him kind of slash payroll elsewhere and still be able to be competitive. That feels exactly like what maybe the Cardinals could be looking for at this point in time. If 2024 doesn't go well, I think he would be almost the perfect guy to be able to blend the rich history and the things that the Cardinals have valued over the course of time with being able to bring it into the new age. I do think the Cardinals have, it's not that they've been terrible in all these facets, but they've lost the edge that they used to have over the rest of the league. They're kind of back to even Steven with the rest of the league and trying to kind of climb their way above that station has been difficult. And I think they recognize that. And I think that's why Hein Bloom has been brought in as an advisor. Let's not go crazy with what his role has been to this point. I get that part. But I also think if you look at his pedigree and like what he's been good at in the past, it kind of sounds exactly like what the Cardinals would be looking for post 2025 and maybe even a little bit earlier. I'm speculating if Mozeliak says, yeah, this year didn't go well either. Maybe it's best if I kind of shift my role to allow the next stage of the evolution of the Cardinals to take place. I don't think that's crazy, but only if this year goes bad, which I'm not ready to say yet that it will.
And I'm not either, but I do think, you know, we got to remember that Hein Bloom fell into their lap. It really was, you know, it's not a big conspiracy because clearly Hein Bloom would have preferred to not be fired from Boston, but it's just, right. It's one of those things where it happened to be right as the Cardinals are figuring out their succession plan after 20 years of whatever it is with John Mozeliak, literally the dude who fits the perfect blueprint of how the Cardinals want to run their business and their baseball ops just got fired and fell into their freaking lap, right? I mean, that's what happened. Like right now, to me, I would put a lot of money that Hein Bloom is going to be the guy. Now, unless he gets another job, you know, a better offer. But even if that's the case, if he goes to the Cardinals, hey, I got this offer. If Mozeliak's leaving in a year, then he's your guy in waiting because I just think it's too perfect of a marriage to me.
Yeah, to me, if he wants it, because that's a bigger time commitment than just being a, you know, a part-time advisor like he is right now. And he's got family and different things that he might prioritize. But if he wants back into one of those seats, I think it's incumbent upon the Cardinals to make him that guy. And that's not a slight to anybody else who might be an internal option that would like to climb the ladder there. I just think there is a pedigree with Hein Bloom and the Cardinals might be kind of missing some of what he's able to provide. And I think that could blend the good run that they've had. And I'm not saying you clean house by any means, but I think Hein Bloom could be a guy to kind of reorient in a way that the Cardinals could use in terms of modernizing the development of how they handle pitching and how they view player development and player acquisitions and things like that. I think he could be a nice fit. And I think almost regardless, like 2024 could go well, they could start hitting again. And then you're dealing from a position of strength when you bring in somebody new, and it probably does wait until Mo's contract is done after 2025. If this year goes great, Mo can say, see, I fixed it. And you know, you're happy with the way things are progressing, but I still think having Hein Bloom around to just kind of like, okay, familiarize yourself with the org. He can then kind of look at what he likes, maybe what he doesn't like. It's not that right now he is of the belief that he's going to take over. I don't think even he would think that that's going to be the case, but it doesn't hurt, right? Isn't that how it was framed by Mo, is to say we've strengthened our bench? That's what he said at winter warmup. And I think that's true until the point in time where you're ready to bring in a pinch hitter. And I think Hein Bloom could certainly fit the description of what they'd be seeking in that.
It's also a tough spot for Mo when you have Gersh and Flores who 100%. Are right there and probably want the job, at least Flores. Gersh, maybe he likes being kind of the second in command. But hey, Brendan Schaefer, great job. Let's end on that right there. Follow Brendan B. Schaefer daily on YouTube. He does all. Hey, Brendan's doing way more than I'm doing, by the way. He's doing live streams after the games. Sometimes. So check him out.
Seriously. Yeah, it's youtube.com/@B. Schaefer12. Subscribe to that. I do have one parting thought, though. What's with the shirt, man? Are you a big Cleveland Guardians fan now? You just did a whole Cardinals podcast in a Guardians tee. What's up with that?
Well, that's a shout out to my buddy, Dan Puente, assistant hitting coach, Cleveland Guardians. Are they in first place? I think they are, right? They're having a nice start. Let me look at the standings here real quick. I got it. Standings. Okay, Cleveland Guardians. Cleveland Guardians, Brendan Schaefer, are in first place in the AL Central.
Okay.
13-6 on the season.
Pretty
that
good.
Means, okay, they're tied with the Yankees, best record in the American League. Let's see, do they have the best record? The best record in baseball right now is the Braves, or the best win percentage, excuse me. The Braves have a 706 win percentage, and the Guardians and Yankees have a 684. So yeah, I did buy this shirt at opening day because I felt like I needed to support the squad, even though I hate the Guardians nickname.
Not a fan of it, huh? I think it's fine.
Are you?
I think it's totally fine. I like that they didn't really change the branding a ton when they did the name switch. Like, it's still kind of the navy and the red. Like, it all kind of looks the same. They just, even the script on the shirt for a while was the same, and they just kind of changed the first few letters because the D-I-A-N-S could stay, and they just had to change the first few letters of it. I don't really mind it, but some people are mad. Some people hate it, whatever. It's like they got the statues. It's the gargoyles or whatever the hell. I think it's fine.
The Guardians. Let's go Guards, baby. That's what it is.
They're guarding the city or whatever.
That's right. From all the crime and poverty and all that. Oh, I kid. Sorry? Hey, St. Louis. Hey, we have our own problems here as well. That'll be another show. All right. Comment, like, subscribe, share the show, share the channel, put in your group text, put on social media. Brendan, great job, buddy. We'll see you next week. Go Cardinals and go Guardians.